Good afternoon and welcome to Candidates Corner. I'm Kelly Murphy. I'm a Bedford resident and I'm here interviewing a state representative candidate, Keith Murphy. Let's cut to the chase before we even go any further. I hear that you have a fantastic wife.
I do. She's beautiful and intelligent.
In fact, we are married. And you are running for state representative, and I promise not to go easier on you simply because of this fact. But for those that don't know you that are watching at home, why don't you tell them a little bit about your background and what brought you to Bedford?
Okay. Well, I've got three children, and the school system here was a huge factor in attracting us to this town, as you know. my background is that I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, originally. I grew up there. I got an education in political science and a master's degree in city planning, and had 20 plus years of restaurant experience. I moved to this state to pursue a career in city planning and kept coming back to the restaurant business. And finally, I decided that that was where I needed to go and open a restaurant. So after we got married and had kids, Bedford was a great choice for us.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about, you tell a great anecdote about government regulation in Baltimore and the reasons behind your decision to start a business in New Hampshire as opposed to starting a business in your hometown.
Okay, well, I looked into opening a restaurant in Baltimore, and they don't print new licenses to sell alcohol there. You got to buy one. And the cost for a liquor license in Baltimore City runs about $400,000. By comparison, the cost for a liquor license in this state is $1,200 a year. So when the time came to move to a state and pick a state, I wasn't married. I didn't have children. I could live anywhere in the country. And New Hampshire came out on top by a number of factors as far as a good place to start a business, especially a restaurant.
And can you say that you've worked hard over your, now you're running for your fourth term in the House of Representatives?
Yeah.
Yeah, can you say that you've worked hard to ensure that government regulation remains at a minimum in the state of New Hampshire?
That would be probably an understatement. I can honestly say that I've voted on probably 6,000 pieces of legislation in three terms, and I have never voted for an increase in regulation for either personal or business enterprise.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, for those that are unaware that are watching at home, each legislator picks a committee at the beginning of the year, and they're assigned to a committee, and they work through a number of bills that are also assigned to that committee. You've served now on three different subcommittees in the House. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience with those?
Absolutely. My first committee was Ways and Means, and I really enjoyed Ways and Means. That deals with taxes and fees throughout the state. That was a five-day-a-week, 10-hour-a-day committee. And I was running a business, and again, I had young children, and it seemed like perhaps not the best fit for my other outside commitments. You know, state representatives are paid $100 a year, so it's not something anybody does for personal gain. My second term, I went to a lighter workload committee, which was commerce, and I loved commerce. Commerce dealt with all kinds of business regulations, taxes, banks. Given my business background, I knew a lot about commerce. And so I was able to make a real contribution in that committee. But again, that was a four-day-a-week committee. So my third term, I backed off a lot. My business has expanded, as you know. And I went to the Labor Committee. And Labor is a once-a-week committee. And again, I was still able to make a huge contribution to that committee because we've got 90-plus employees in one business, and you run a sports club, and there's several employees for that business. So we have experience dealing with those relevant statutes.
You have introduced a number of pieces of legislation since you have come on as a state representative. What would you say is the piece of legislation or the issue that you fought for that was most beneficial or impactful for Bedford residents?
I would have to say, for Bedford specifically, I've been working for 5+ years to find a way to build a sound barrier along Teaberry Lane, out in along the side of the Everett Turnpike. You know, there's about 10 houses there, and if you stand in the back of these people's yards and on their decks, it sounds like you are by an airport. It's extremely loud. DOT has come out and taken sound readings, And they say, well, it's definitely loud enough to justify the sound barrier, but we just don't have enough people here. The most recent assessments for that neighborhood indicate that they're down about 10% in assessed value due solely to the noise pollution. And these aren't huge houses. These aren't wealthy people. They worked really hard to pay for their homes. And for the most part, they're retired. And the state has basically taken a giant chunk of their wealth. So I've been working for 5+ years to find a way to pay for that noise barrier. And I'm confident that eventually we can get this done.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced up in Concord?
In Concord, personality really matters. So not taking disagreement personally. And, you know, being a restaurant owner, I think that to a degree my customer service background comes into play for that. So no matter what the issue is, I have to find a way to reach across the aisle and find common ground with Democrats, other Republicans, and move legislation forward. And I think I've been pretty effective at that.
When you're involved in the budgeting process, the budget gets presented very early on in the year to the House of Representatives, and then you work through it in subcommittees, and as bills are passed, they're assigned sort of dollar amounts for funding and whatnot. What is the process that you mentally go through in the budget, and what skill set are you drawing on when you're doing that?
Well, the budget is submitted by the governor to the full House, and that usually happens in mid-January. From there, it's referred to the Finance Committee. And the Finance Committee is probably twice the work of Ways and Means. It's extremely high workload. So I have no desire or wish to ever sit on Finance. I would have to marry the House of Representatives, and then you would never see me again. So the finished product comes out of the House of Finance, and I take a look at the bill. I mean, I read it. It's quite a document, and it spends upwards of $4 billion a year. And we do a biennial term, so it's about an $8 to $10 billion spending package. I decide if this is something I can support or not. This most recent term, I thought long and hard because it spent more money than I was comfortable spending. But there was a lot of good stuff in that budget. And if we didn't pass our budget, the starting point for the Senate was going to be the governor's budget, which, believe me, spent a lot more than we did. As far as good stuff in that budget, there was a significant increase, I think 75%, in drug and alcohol treatment money, which I think is very important. I think the opioid crisis in New Hampshire really needs drastic attention. There was significant reductions in the business enterprise tax and the business profits tax. The BET has never been cut. BPT hasn't been cut in over 20 years. And I think that if we want to drive wages up, as we all want to see people do well in this state, you have to drive up opportunity and create jobs. And that means bringing businesses in and letting them thrive. Even in my 11 years in this state, I've seen it get not as business friendly as it was when I got here. And currently, something like 10% of New Hampshire residents work in Massachusetts. And that's crazy. I mean, we're supposed to have this New Hampshire advantage, right? Remember that term. And how is it possible that 10% of our state works in Massachusetts? And the reason is that Massachusetts has leapfrogged us in terms of attractiveness for businesses. So we need to get that back. We need to, again, be a place that businesses want to locate to and grow. And those tax cuts in that budget, I think, was a significant part of that. So at the end of the day, I voted for the budget.
Now, the state of New Hampshire, not only are we below Massachusetts, but we're actually kind of far down the line as far as business-friendly communities are concerned.
Well, the most recent ranking that I saw had us at, I think, 46th in the country for overall business friendliness.
Which is horrifying, frankly.
It is terrible.
So what do you think needs to be done other than cutting the BPT and the BET? What else do you think needs to be done to attract businesses to the state of New Hampshire?
The single biggest thing other than lowering the cost of doing business with the state would have to be lowering energy costs. We have some of the highest energy costs in the country. And I know for a fact that the Department of Economic Development has reached out to several companies. For example, I believe Ruger was one of them, the gun maker. And Ruger came right out and said, the cost of doing business is too high from an energy standpoint in New Hampshire, and they went to North Carolina for their recent expansion. You know, that's unacceptable. We have to find ways to make energy cheaper in this state, and that means, frankly, finding new ways to get energy here mm-hmm. and expanding the supply.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, on a little bit more of a lighthearted note, what is your favorite day in the House of Representatives?
My favorite day in the House of Representatives. I feel like you're asking me a question that when you want me to go somewhere. we have some fun times in the House. It isn't the day that I get locked in and I'm there till midnight. That happens every year. You know, we have Tartan Day. That's when half the representatives wear kilts and we listen to bagpipe music for half an hour. That's entertaining for the first 10 minutes.
I can imagine. No, I was thinking specifically of Hot Dog Day.
Hot Dog Day. Yes, that's a great point. My good friend, Representative Burt in Goffstown, he came into the House with me six years ago, and he has started a charity fundraiser, which is a hot dog barbecue. And he lines up ice cream and hot dogs, and he has people bring in all sorts of. It's a potluck, and it has grown to be a tradition that is probably the biggest draw of anything we do in the House, and all the money goes for the American Humane Society. So it's for a great cause. And that's a day that we all look forward to at this point.
Well, if I was locked in rooms until midnight budgeting, I would look forward to Hot Dog Day too.
Anybody who wants to run for state rep needs to understand that the punishment for running for state representative is that at least once a year you get locked in and can't leave. In fact, if you want to go to the bathroom, you get escorted by a state trooper. True story.
You're listening to Keith Murphy, Republican candidate for state representative on Candidate's Corner on Bedford 105.1.
I recall getting escorted by a state trooper.
That's right. You were a rep last term.
Yes. So let's backtrack just a little bit, because I think that sometimes people don't understand the process that you go through. Why don't you explain a little bit about not only the House session work that you do, but the subcommittee commitments and what it entails to serve?
Well, when you win election to the House, you're mailed a packet by the House office, the House clerk's office. And in that packet, you indicate your choice of committee. And you try to pick committees that you think you can add something to. So for me, it was commerce. It was labor. But you also want to take into account the fact that some committees are extremely busy and some committees rarely meet. For instance, we have a lot of veterans in the House, and a lot of those veterans choose to work on Veterans Affairs Committee. We have a lot of people who work with computers, and they're typically looking for Science and Technology Committee. Once you are assigned to a committee, you go to those committee meetings, you listen to testimony from, frankly, too many lobbyists, but also a lot of citizens that take the time to come in and speak on the bill in front of you. And then you, as well as the whole committee, decide to recommend the bill pass or not pass the House. The House meets every week or 2 weeks. We pass the bills or we kill the bills, and the ones that we pass go to the Senate, where they have the same process. And then if it passes the Senate, it goes to the governor for a signature. Mm-hmm. If she vetoes the bill, then we all come back and we try to override her, but...
It takes a lot of time.
It does.
I want to go back to the opioid crisis, because you had mentioned that in passing before.
Yes.
And it really is such an impactful issue, not only for the state of New Hampshire as a whole, but for almost all of the residents of the Bedford can say that at least they know someone who's been affected by that epidemic. What do you think needs to be done at a state level to combat that issue?
Well, we did allocate funding for drug courts. And drug courts are supposed to be directing people who are addicted out of the prison system and into treatment. I think steering people towards treatment is the single best thing we can do as a state to addressing this crisis. If it's effective, and studies show that it is, it can really cut down on recidivism rates. When you send people to prison, if anything, you're connecting them with future sources or other people who are going to continue that habit in their lives. It is possible to get drugs in prison, and you're not really solving the root problem, which is the desire to get that high again. So people that serve their time, they get out, too many times they get right back into the same bad habits. I can say in my restaurant, I've had to terminate a number of employees for coming in while high on drugs. And it's been increasingly bad the last 2 years. Last year, I'll tell you this little story. Last year, I had a cook who broke into our diner at 3 o'clock in the morning for $280. And he committed a felony. It was felony breaking and entering. And he went to jail. And he was 8 hours from getting a paycheck. You know, he was going to get a paycheck for twice or three times what he stole, but he needed it right now. And when you have somebody with that kind of physical addiction, sending them to jail isn't going to be the solution. We need to have treatment money allocated. And you will not find a bigger advocate in this state for less government and smaller government, but there's it is the definition of economic and fiscal conservatism, I think, to steer money to treatment over jail.
Well, now let's break this down, because I know that the state allocated money towards the drug courts, but I don't know, in my conversations with Chief Profonsky and with members of the Bedford Police Department, the biggest, the most frequent anecdote that I hear is a situation where someone says, I'm ready to go get help, and there are no beds. There's no place for them to go. So what can we do on a state level to answer that issue?
We need to continue to increase funding for treatment. Now, the most recent budget did include a 75% increase, almost doubling the amount of money allocated for drug treatment. I'm not going to sit here and say that's enough. I think we need more. I voted against a program that I'm sure that the chief loves. It's called Operation Granite Hammer. And I voted against it. And the reason why was that that money specifically did not go towards drug treatment. It went towards locking people up. Had that money been directed towards treatment instead of enforcement, I would have been fully in favor of it.
What are some of the other issues, in your opinion, that are facing the state of New Hampshire that, that you're working tirelessly for, that are, you know, very important issues to you?
Well, as a small government conservative, as a constitutionalist, I have the same concerns that I think other people that have my set of principles have. I've been endorsed by the NRA. I've been endorsed by Gun Owners of New Hampshire. I've been endorsed by the Right to Life New Hampshire people. I'm a strong believer in the right to life, as you know. So other issues would be, as I said, increasing the job opportunities, making it easier to start a business. I think finding a way to balance growth in this state over the long term. It's a small state, and we're beginning to see some pressures, especially in the southern tier. Finding a way to balance what we like about New Hampshire while taking in new citizens in this tier is going to be very important.
Let's talk about gun control for a minute.
Sure.
Because it's hard to go even a day without seeing a headline of a domestic shooting or an international shooting that takes, you know, a couple, many, tens more lives. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's we're at a point, I think, where there's a lot of scrutiny on gun laws in the United States of America, and particularly in the individual states. What are your thoughts on increased legislation, increased requirements to buy a firearm and to hold a license?
Well, the short answer is that I would oppose them. The truth is that in this country, gun homicides are down by half since 1990. In half. While the number of guns held by private citizens has doubled. Now, you can't necessarily say that's causation, but it certainly does lend itself to question the perception that there's more gun murders than there used to be, or there's more than ever. That's just not true. There have been more high-profile shootings of multiple people at the same time, and that is driving this perception, but it is a misperception. If you look at the statistics, the crime rates, the violent crime rates in this country have fallen by half, while the number of guns held by citizens has doubled. So based on that alone, I would oppose based on the statistics, I would oppose for legislation. But also, we have a guaranteed Second Amendment right, according to the U.S. Constitution and our state constitution, which strongly recognize and protect that people have the right to keep and bear arms. And I take the oath that I swear every session, session year, very seriously. And it says that you will swear to uphold those constitutions. I think anybody who votes in favor of increased legislation on guns does not take that oath seriously.
You're listening to Keith Murphy, Republican candidate for state representative on Candidate's Corner on Bedford 105.1.
Now, you're not only my state representative, but you're also my husband, but you're also my state representative.
Yes.
So let's talk about education, because that's one of the single most important issues to me.
Sure.
And certainly to our children. What are your thoughts on Common Core? What do you think the state's role in education should be?
I'm not a fan of the Common Core guidelines, curriculum, because it's federally driven. And that answers the second part of your question as well. I think the state should be, not the federal government, but the state should be the primary decider of what happens in education. And more than that, I think as many decisions as possible should be devolved to the local level. I think decisions for Bedford schools should be made here by our elected officials and by our parents, not in Concord and certainly not in Washington, D.C. And so anytime that there's a bill to devolve things back to the local level, I support it. I'll give you an example. There's a town called Croydon, as you know, maybe. Croydon does not have access to a small public school, and so those parents thought it in their best interest to sign a contract with a local private school and send their children there, and it saved them money. It was cheaper than making the same contract with the nearest public school in a different town. The Attorney General's office said, you can't do that. So we passed a bill through the House and the Senate to specifically allow Croydon to decide where their kids go to school. And the governor vetoed it. So Croydon is going to have to spend more money now to send their kids to the public school, or they can challenge it to the Supreme Court. Because, frankly, their interpretation of the law that the Attorney General has relied upon is not quite accurate.
Did you want to speak to the educational funding debacle in the state of New Hampshire?
The Claremont decision?
That one.
I will say that I've routinely supported anything I can do to overturn those decisions at the legislative level. I'm all for adequately funding an education, but that should be decided by the towns, not by the state and not by the Supreme Court. And if you actually read the Constitution, it's a very imaginative interpretation that's been applied by the Supreme Court. At this point, it's precedent, and as an attorney, you know what that means and what kind of hill we'd have to climb to change it. It really means a constitutional amendment, and I've supported that in the past, and I'll continue to do so. But that requires a 2/3 majority by the House, and then a 2/3 majority by the people of the state at the ballot. It's exceptionally hard to reach that hurdle.
Mm-hmm. But there was a significant amount of switching tracks just a little bit. I want you to talk a little bit about the return of the money to Bedford that happened last year.
Oh, yes, yes. There's a funding formula at the state level. And that formula had, until last year, had a stabilization clause, which meant that if a town grew quickly or it shrank quickly, the money that went to that town by the state could not go up or down too much. So when Bedford built a high school, obviously our school district got a lot bigger in terms of number of students. And we are one of only several, one of three towns, I think. Wyndham was certainly one of them.
Hooksett, maybe.
Very few towns had an increase in population. Most towns, especially Manchester, Nashua, the city school districts, had a very dramatic decrease in population. But because of that clause for stabilization, Manchester and Nashua could not lower their school budget. They continued to get more money than they really deserved under the original formula. And Bedford and Wyndham and Dover was the third one, those towns got a lot less than we deserved. For Bedford, it was about $4 million a year. And so we had in that budget, one more reason to support the budget, by the way, that budget that we passed this term brought that money back to the town. So $4 million a year due back to Bedford taxpayers.
A significant amount of money.
A lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know we're getting to the end of this, but I really want to talk a little bit about what kinds of bills you see come through your committee.
Well, Labor Committee, certainly minimum wage comes through our committee every year, usually three or four times. Right to Work comes through our committee. All sorts of regulations, everything from laws forcing employers to have a breastfeeding room, that came through our committee last term.
Great bill, by the way.
Yeah, I voted against it. If you're in a mall kiosk, how are you going to have a breastfeeding room? It didn't make any sense.
We are going to have to agree to disagree.
Yes, I guess so. All sorts of mandates on employers, and sometimes there's some very good common sense bills that we can all agree on. It passes the committee 24-0. There's some pretty hard-fought ones that are very partisan and come down the line, 13-10.
But you love the work that you do on the committee.
I find it very rewarding, and I really believe that we do good stuff up there.
Well, we are almost out of time, but there is a primary coming up on September 13th. Polls are open from 7 to 7, followed by a general election on November 8th. So why don't you take a moment to tell the people watching at home why they should vote for you on September 13th and hopefully again on November 8th.
Sure. I would really appreciate your vote on Election Day because I have been a consistent conservative. I believe I've represented the general values of this town for three terms very well. My last term, I didn't miss a single vote. I was present for every single bill. And I take the job seriously. I want to take a minute to thank my wife and my children and my employees who allow me to take the time out of my everyday life to drive to Concord and sit in a hard wooden chair every Wednesday and cast those votes. I do it certainly not for any money, because again, it's $100 a year. I do it because I strongly believe that these principles are the right thing to do, and I think it's a sacrifice worth making. And so I ask for your vote and your support on Election Day. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.